Hi, Shalom Aleichem, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, how's the Rav doing?
Okay, everything's okay on this side. My sister, you know, has been here for the kavura of her husband, my brother-in-law. Now she's leaving today, so after we finish, Baruch Hashem, I'm going to call her up and see how things are going. So it's been a little bit of a strange week for me.
Was he ill?
Yeah, he was ill for the last year. It got pretty bad. But, you know, he leaves a great, great legacy. And I just hope my sister will be able, Mirz Hashem, to go on and continue having nachas from her children or grandchildren. I don't know if you were able to print out any of the Mar Makomos, but perhaps one of the most important things that we want to see is a Gemara in Chulin, which you should find on page 3. But before we see the Gemara inside, I wanted to give you, in a sense, a list of questions, all of which really depend upon the principles that we hopefully will develop. And these questions are practical, and they have been addressed by the poskim in our time. And what I'd like from you is to help me out. After I give you the list, I have, I think, about 11 cases on my list. And if you could possibly tell me, in your experience, back there in Clanton Park, how many, if any of these come up, as commonplace or common issue. So first, let me just shoot off the entire list. Number one, at a dinner in honor of those who have contributed for the sake of the Jewish community, we want to honor as the guest of honor a non-Jew. We want to give him kavod and public thanksgiving and recognition for his contributions. That's going to be an issue in the poskim. Number two, are we allowed to receive, and this is very relevant here in Israel and also in Chutz Laaretz, government support? A non-Jewish government funds to support the Jewish community. Question number three. Is it permissible to place pushkas, kupas tzedaka, in places which are frequented by goyim, knowing full well that the money that we are going to collect is coming from non-Jewish sources? Number four, can we accept gifts from goyim and support the poor people amongst our nation publicly? Number five, what about an irreligious Jew, or as Rav Kook would have said, a not yet religious Jew? He's not observant, he violates the Shabbos publicly even. Does he have the same status as a guy, which means we have to be very, very careful, very inhibited, if you will, before we accept financial gifts from those who desecrate the Shabbos publicly? And this question about the status of a mumar is one of perhaps the most important questions in the world of Kiruv, because if you have Jews who are far away from Yiddishkeit, then sometimes by accepting their contributions for perhaps the building of a school, a Jewish school, a synagogue, or sending young people to Israel on programs, all this kind of, you know, contribution, federation money could somehow bring less religious Jews closer to the fold. And if on the other hand we reject their contributions, that could perhaps push them away and generate certain hatred. So although technically the question I'm asking today is a tzedakah question about receiving gifts and contributions from irreligious Jews, it really has a broader application within the context of Kiruv. Question number six is specifically with regard to writing a Sefer Torah. You know, we sell very often letters because, as you and I know, a Sefer Torah is a very expensive item. Can we invite irreligious Jews not just to contribute tzedakah in general for various causes, but specifically in the case of writing a Sefer Torah? Next question. What is the status of a Reform synagogue, and can we receive gifts and contributions from the members of a Reform synagogue for the sake of building an Orthodox synagogue? In some cases, this question goes even further, and if the Reform community has dwindled, they may even offer perhaps the entire building as a gift to the Orthodox community. Finally, building yeshivos and Talmud Toros. Can we accept funds from non-Jews or from mumrim, from those who are Shabbos desecrators, for the sake of building a Talmud Torah or a yeshiva? So we went from general tzedakah for the aniyim to specifically building a Beis HaKnesses for the mitzvah of prayer, up to the writing of a Sefer Torah, and now we're talking about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Next question. If we are allowed to accept gifts from these categories of Goyim or Mumrim, are we allowed to publicize those gifts and to engrave their names on the synagogue building? You know, John Paul Jones, master builder. And then the poskim want to address another question, and that is the care. I don't know what word to use. The zehirus is the word that the poskim use, on the part of tzaddikei hadoros. These are the giant leaders and pious leaders of the Jewish communities throughout Jewish history, throughout the generations, to be very inhibited about accepting and benefiting from any non-kosher money, any money that has a questionable source. And why were the Gedolim so hesitant and so inhibited about doing so? Just in passing, again, we'll get back into this later, I would mention the Brisker Rav, for example, who, when he built his institutions, he would check out the sources of the money that was coming in to the very last, to the last ruble, to make sure that it was coming from Jewish sources. So now, I want to take a little pause, and I would like to throw the ball into your court before we embark on our study for today, the sugya in Chulin, and ask you if any of the questions that I raised, which are all addressed by the poskim, are commonplace in the kind of encounters that you have in Toronto or beyond Toronto.
It's very common, and it also has there's the related issue, which we probably won't have time to get into, is Hanifa, when an organization not only accepts money from someone who's Mechal of Shabbos Befarhasia, but also honors him and praises him.
And that was the first question I raised about appointing a non-Jew, for example, and again, when we get to non-Jews, we're talking about the issue of Mumrim as well, as the guest of honor at a dinner. And we go And we go ahead and we give them a tremendous amount of
Kathleen Wynne.
Of Kevin.
Please.
Can you tell me a little about her? Just I know what that is.
No, She's the Premier of Ontario. She's the I'm going to say something kosher about her. She's the Premier. She's the Premier of Ontario.
However,
as Education Minister, fought very hard against the campaign to have some sort of funding for Yiddish schools, for private schools, and she really fought against that. And then last year, UJA had a big dinner in her honor, which I protested along with others, and in fact, I did not give to UJA this year, which is a whole other question, but I didn't give. And every time they called me, I told the person, I'm pretty good, big Yesher Cook for the person calling, that taking their time to serve the Seaboard, and told them why. I said, please pass it up. I never got a call back. I must have had 3-4 different phone calls, and I wrote a whole email to the executive director or something like whoever it was, expressing my opposition to doing that sort of thing and want a commitment never to do it again. No response. So, reports it elsewhere.
I got a question.
Yeah, great, David.
What about if it's from people, but they do something that's not exactly looked at to raise money?
It's going to be the same. It's going to be the same sort of issue. Like, for example, they used to say that the racketeers. You know, this is the United States history. I don't know if the same applies in Canada.
Meyer Lansky is a big Zionist.
Yeah. That's right. Some of the worst racketeers were the best givers. You know, easy come, easy go kind of thing. So that all the shilas that we asked are going to be specifically relevant to that question. So what do we have in the Gemara in Chulin? So what I'd like you to do, if you can, is to open up to page 3, and you're going to see a Sugyan Chulin that begins on Daf Hey Amid Aleph and continues on to Daf Hey Amid Beis. And let me present to you a little bit of an overview, or perhaps an introduction, to the Gemara in Chulin. The pasuk at the very beginning of Sefer Vayikra says, "Adam ki yakriv mikem karban lashem." And I'm going to rewrite the pasuk, and I'm going to omit one word for pedagogical purposes. "Adam ki yakriv karban lashem." Sounds pretty good. It flows, but the Torah added the word mikem. And that becomes what we call a mute. Mikem, the low mikulchem. From you specifically, meaning we're whittling it down to a very limited category, the low mikulchem. But there are those who are outside of the parameters of the individuals who bring a karban to the Beis HaMikdash, karban Hashem. Says the Gemara, Lahotzi, this comes to exclude, es hamumar. Okay, we have to know exactly how to define a mumar. Umenaseich yayin, someone who worships avodah zarah. Umechalel Shabbos befarhesya, and he violates the Shabbos publicly. Shein mekablin mehem karbonos. We don't accept from them karbonos. Now, Rabosai, when we discuss, as I started in my outline of the various questions, the issue of receiving contributions from non-Jewish sources, are we talking about karbonos? Give me a quick yes or no answer, like without thinking.
Yes.
No, we're not talking about karbanos. We're talking about staka. We're talking about building institutions, building synagogues, supporting the poor. That's staka. Those are communal.
Herod was a guy.
Okay, we'll get to Herod. Wait a minute. Yechiel, no, I just.
Herod was a guy.
No. Hello, I'm just. You got to give me a few minutes here. What I want to set as a framework, because otherwise we're not going to get to first base here, is the following distinction. Karbonos and staka. For example, Rabbosai, What are we reading this Shabbos besides the regular Kriya of Parshas Vayakel?
Shkolin.
Now, if you take a look at the first source on your first page, you will see that the Mishnah says in Masechta Shkolim, Hanochri Sheshaklu Ein Mekablin Biyada. What was the purpose of the Machzis HaShekel?
Census.
Say it again?
Big census.
No. I'm asking, what was the money earmarked for, David?
Carbonus Seaver.
Correct, for Carbonus. Now, we just finished learning a Gemara in Chulin. And the Gemara in Chulin says, Mikem velo mikulchem. So I begin to understand that with regard to Carbonos, we're going to be very, very careful about receiving Carbonos min hagoyim. And for that matter, sometimes we might even classify a financial gift as a carbon. But only if the money is earmarked for a carbon, and that's what Machzis HaShekel is all about. So we are excluding the goyim from Machzis HaShekel, and now when we read the Gemara in Chulin, we get the impression that we're also excluding goyim from Karbonos in general. After all, Machzis HaShekel would seem to be a case of a carbon. I mean, money that's given for a carbon. And the Gemara says, hey, mekabel mehem carbonos. However, just give me 1 second, Joe. If you take a look at the rest of the Mishnah, the balance of the Mishnah in Shkolim, on page 1, there it says, aval nidarim unidavos mekablim miyadam. Nidarim and Nidavos, which are voluntary karbonos, we do accept from goyim. And basically, what the Gemara seems to be assuming is that there are two categories of karbonos. There's what's called a karbon chova, and there's a karbon nidava. In the case of a karbon nidava, let's say, for example, the classical case of a karbon nidava is called an ola. And if a non-Jew wants to volunteer to bring a carbon ola, then, as we saw in the Mishnah in Shkolim, we will in fact accept his carbon ola as a carbon nidava. And that is a statement which basically can be formulated in the following way. Ish, this is a pasuk in Vayikra, Mi base Yisrael, Asha Yakriv Karbono, Lechol Nidrechem, Lechol Nidvosechem. What's the extra word, Lechol? And this is quoted by the Rav, the Bartanura there in Shkolin. Le Rabos es Ha'akum, Shehem Nodrim, Nidorim, Unidovos, Ki Yisrael. So we don't accept the Machzis HaShekel from the Goyim. And we thought that the Machzis HaShekel is typical of tzedakah, but we're going to prove that that's not so. Machzis HaShekel is typical of karbonos, but what kind of a karbon? Not a nedarim u'nedavos karbon, that we can accept from the goyim, but rather a karbon chova. So again, Rabbosai, what I want to emphasize to you as we come close to Parsha Shkolim is that the category of Shkolim is not a category of tzedakah, but rather it's a category of karbonos. And within the constellation of karbonos, we have two subsidiaries, two tributaries. One is a karbon adava, and one is a karbon chova. Machzis HaShekel comes under the concept of karbon chova, and therefore the goyim are excluded. And the reason for that is because the Torah says mikem, and mikem means velo mikulchem. However, with regard to tzedakah, in general, there we have a different approach. What is the different approach to tzedakah? Again, with the exception of Machzis HaShekel, which comes under karbon chova, there we have a distinction which is based on a sugya in Masechta Erchin between Bifarhesya and Bitzina. So for example, if you turn to page 4 of your Mar Mekomos, you will see that the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Tzedakah, which is on the top of your page 4, Siman Reish Nun Dalid, Asur Li Yisrael Li Tol Tzedakah Min HaAkum B'Far Hesya. And then it says, where is it? Okay, I'm not finding it right now. The Gemara in Erchin says that with regard to tzedakah, it depends. If the tzedakah is being given b'far hesya, and this you'll see on page 2. I told you to look on page 4, I think, right? So if you take a look on page 2, you'll see on the top a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the Gemara makes a distinction between Farhesya and Sina. Okay. So Rashi says in Masechta Sanhedrin that we don't want to accept gifts for tzedakah from Goyim b'farhesya. And the reason for that is Mishum dehavi chilul Hashem. Rashi says that it would be chilul Hashem to accept these. You see the top Rashi on the top left of page 2. Mekabel tzedakah v'nachum havi chilul Hashem. It's a chilul Hashem that we accept publicly tzedakah min hagoyim. However, in the case of Bitsina, then it would seem that we're allowed to receive tzedakah from the Goyim. Reish Nun Dalid. Just 1 second, I had it here. Oh, there it is. I had it before. I don't know what got into me. Asur li Yisrael li tol tzedakah min ha'bikaron b'far hesya. You have that on the top of page 4. I had it before, but I...
Yeah.
Okay, so the distinction between b'far hesya and b'tzina applies to tzedakah. As far as karbonos is concerned, we don't make this distinction. The distinction in karbonos is between a karbon chova and a karbon nidov. Now, there's a tosis in Baba Basra, which you'll see on page 2, and there tosis says, okay, I'll read to you the line that's most relevant to us. He says, Mutter lekabel migoy ner lebeis haknesses. Now, what's the difference between this and the discussion that we had before about tzedakah? After all, it would seem that this is the case of tzedakah before hesya. Meaning, okay, maybe I'm confusing you. I'm trying not to confuse you and not to confuse myself. Tosis in Baba Basra makes the following distinction. If a guy writes out a check as a gift for tzedakah, and let's say you want to use those funds for a Beis HaKnesses, that is asur to receive b'far hesya. But if the guy comes forward with an object, for example, he owns a beautiful candelabra and he wants to donate it to a Jewish cause, to a synagogue, Tosis says we're allowed to accept it. This is the bottom left of your page 2. He says, Ahad Makabel Nidava Shragal Beknishta. He says that the reason for that is ha sometimes you shouldn't lo havi kamo karbon. I'm sorry. Mishum da havi kamo karbon. So Rabosai, we now have a case of an object of value that's being contributed by a guy for a Beis HaKnesses, and we're allowed to accept it. We just finished saying that if it's b'farhesia, we're enjoined from accepting a contribution of a guy. It's Rashi says it's Chil Hashem. Oh, so Tosa says if they're coming forward with an object of value, that's called a carbon, and it's not stuck. Rabbanu Shalom, I don't get it. What's the difference between writing out a check for $1,000 and bringing a candelabra which is worth $1,000? You know, in Hilchas Kedushin, shove a kesef kekesef. Joe?
I would think that maybe it would be like Avodah Zorah. A goy has an ability to mevatel an Avodah Zorah. And once he does that, then a Jew can have enough from it. Money is money. You use money to buy things or whatever. I don't understand this.
What I'm asking is, Tosfos says the following.
Yeah, but we have the difference. Because money is used, it's not an object. It's not something you can be mevatel. Money you can't be bottle. It's money.
Okay, but that's what you're saying is 100% right. But what we're trying to understand is what does Tosis mean, the Havik a carbon? Tosis says the following, that if a guy voluntarily brings a carbon, what's the law? We accept it. If a guy volunteers to bring tztaka, that means cash, and everybody knows about it, we cannot accept it. Says Tosfos, if the guy wants to bring a candelabra and contribute it to the Beis HaKnesses, we accept it. Forget about Avodah Zarah. He didn't worship the candelabra. There's no issues here of Avodah Zarah and Bittul Avodah Zarah. The issue is that we don't accept tztaka from a guy if it's mefarhesia. Why are we accepting this candelabra? Says Tosfos, because the candelabra is not tztaka, but rather it's carbon. And the difference between
carbon.
And with regard to carbon, we saw that unless it's a carbon chova or maxis hashekel for a carbon chova, we're allowed to accept nidarim and nidavis of a guy. Tosis is saying that when he brings forward this candelabra, it's equivalent to him bringing forward a behemoth ola as a carbon nidav in the Beis HaMikdash. The physical object, which is be'en, is a carbon. So I'm trying to rack my brains and figure out why is it that we don't want tztaka from goyim if it's farhesia, and yet we're okay with karbanos, barring the exclusion of a karban chova. You follow my point here? I'm sweating this out because I see that Tosfos is operating with a fundamental distinction between two categories. One is called carbon, the other is called tztaka. In the first case, we're very liberal. We're going to accept carbonus from goyim, nedarim, nedavos. In the second case, not so pashut that we can accept gifts that are tztaka from goyim. The Chiddush of Tosfos is that if the guy wants to contribute for the building of a Beis HaKnesses, and if instead of contributing money, he contributes an item of value, then that item of value is redefined as carbon. It's no longer categorized and subsumed under tztaka. He's not giving the value so much, he's giving the object. And that's like a carbon for the Beis HaMikdash. Just one second, David. Let me just see if I read that correctly. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, David.
Okay, so I just wanted to say that not all carbons except from goyim, like a shlomim, for example, would not be. It's only an oil.
Right, but I'm asking you the following question, David, and I don't think I'm hearing an answer from you.
No, I understand that.
What is the difference between these two categories, carbon and stock?
Because you need it.
Need it. That's
so I want to suggest something here, and again, you know, it's just, you know, you're the jury. There's a Gemara earlier on the same page in Baba Basra that explains why we don't accept tztaka from goyim with a pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi. And the pasuk says, Bivosh Ktsira Tishavarna. Rashi says, Kishetichles Chus Shebiyodam, the Yavesh Lachluchis Maisit Stokashalahem Ozi Shavu. The Navi is predicting the downfall of the Jewish people, and he's linking it to the moment in time in which Yivesh Lachluchis Maisit Stokashalahem. There will no longer be Tztaka. Now, Tztaka has a specific relationship to Geula, right? Tzion b'mishpat tipadav v'shaver b'tztaka. That's why, according to the Vilna Gaon, on the night of Pesach, we invite the Aniyim to join us at the table. Vosepes on Pesach, on Sukkot we don't do so, because Pesach is the Chag HaGeula, and we want to do Tztaka on this night of Geula to bring about the Geula. It's like we all become Lubavitchers on the night of Pesach because we want Mashiach now. Why? Because the night of Geula, and this is the Vilna Gaon, mind you, and that's why we collect for most Chitin, this is the night which has a certain skula for the ultimate Geula. Now, there are many sources in Tanakh and in Chazal that Geula depends upon Kaparas Avonos. So I see here an equation, A equals B equals C, that Staka is going to bring about Kapara, and that Kapara will bring about Geula. And Yeshayahu HaNavi says that Chas V'Shalom, the opposite is going to happen. If the Yeveshus of Lachluchus of Maisit Staka is a reality, and we're no longer involved in Staka. Stone is destroyed because they are unwilling to fulfill the mitzvah of tztaka. Now, the geula shetavo bimhera is a final victory in the ongoing battle from the beginning of the last of the Avos and his brother Esav. This conflict between Esav and Yaakov is, the Gemara tells us, when one is up, the other is down, and that when Rome is built, Yerushalayim is down. If we give the Goyim the opportunity of fulfilling the mitzvah of tztaka, then what are we giving into their hands? We are presenting them with what? With kapara, with a merit and a schus that's going to make them victorious, chas v'shalom, in the battle against the Jewish people. This, I think, is what Rashi means by chil Hashem. It's a tremendous chil Hashem if we the Jewish people, cannot support our institutions, our poor people. We have to reach our arms out to the goyim in order to let them support our aniyim and our institutions. That is a tremendous chul Hashem in which we are giving them the opportunity of fulfilling a mitzvah that's really our mitzvah, a mitzvah that can give us the schus in the confrontation against Esav and bring about the geula. We are now handing it over to them on a silver platter. Not so in the case of Karbanos. Karbanos are also mechaprim, but it's a different kind of concept. It's a more personal, individual karbon. The chovas tzibur and the chovas karbon, that has an impact perhaps on the entire nation. But when an individual, even if his name is John Paul Jones, wants to come forward and achieve a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the bringing of a nedava, we accept it. That's karbon. Karban means I give up something of myself in order to achieve a higher level and to inspire myself to that way of life. That's called a karban. Tzedakah is different. Tzedakah means that I want to support the Jewish community. And that's a very dangerous thing to give over to the goyim. So I'm not saying that I can claim I have absolute clarity here, but Tosfos in Masechet Bava Basra, by classifying a gift, again a physical gift of a goy to a synagogue, as karban, he is saying that that's the attempt of an individual goy within the framework of his own life as a spiritual entity, as a tzelem Elokim, to achieve a greater inspired way of life. But it only has the status of a karban. He's bringing a physical object. Once he starts giving us money, and that becomes tzedakah, then we want to stay away. Now, coming back... Yeah,
David. I have a question. Let's say the goy says, here's money, but go use it to buy candles for the synagogue or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe that would depend on the following. If the guy has a right to earmark the money that he's giving to the Jewish community for X, and X is a physical object, and if insofar as he puts this as a clause in his gift, and otherwise he wants his money back, then maybe, just maybe, I don't know, he has rights to add this condition to his gift, and the money is not transferred to the Jewish community. The money goes straight from the hands of the gizbar, whoever he is, Jack Cohen, into the hands of the seller, and that money is going from the guy into the hands of the seller, and now the physical object that was purchased with that money is given as a donation to the synagogue. That, Tosfos would say, is called a karban, even though it starts with a physical object. Okay. There are a lot of complicated laws here, but I just want to move on because, you know, we're running out of time. Okay. So let's go back to the sugya in Bava Basra. I'm sorry, to the sugya in Chul that we began with. If we assume that you're allowed to receive from a guy a physical object, as we saw in Tosfos in Bava Basra, and the reason for that is because that physical contribution, that object, is a karban, and the law is that we are permitted to receive karbanos from goyim, what happens in the case of a mishumad? A mishumad, as you know, is a Jew who is guilty of apostasy. He now converted to another religion, right? He's a mishumad. And now he wants to give a gift to the Beis HaKnesses. Oh. So in general, the halacha is that we accept a karban from a guy. However, we saw earlier, mikem velo mikulchem, and that was to exclude a mumar. This Jew who converted to Islam or Christianity, who's now a mumar, he is bringing a karban, and I mean it practically. I'm talking about, you know, if somebody wakes you up in the middle of the night and he says he wants to test you, can I bring a karban bizman hazeh? And you start thinking of all the different chakiris about, you know, if makriv and vafal pishayim bayis and all those sugis, forget it. Just tell him he can bring a karban bizman hazeh if he donates a physical object to a Beis HaKnesses. That's called a karban. I mean it practically. Al pi halach, that's what it is. So now this mumar wants to bring a karban, bizman hazeh. Not a karban on the mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash on the Har Bayis, but a karban in the form of a physical object which he wants to contribute to the Beis HaKnesses. We just finished saying that although we can accept karbanos from goyim, but not from a Yisrael mumar, and this individual is a mishumad, He is a mumar, that I can guarantee you. And therefore, we are not permitted to accept his gift. He may want to give this gift for any number of reasons, whatever his motivations are, but we don't accept it. And this you'll see on page 3, the next to the last source on your page, the Mari Vile, who writes that Lashon HaTosfot Perek Kavos HaMakabel HaHutaya, etc., etc., we accepted it, Eishraga, Dinadav Shraga Beit Nishta, and it wasn't because of Shalom Malchus, it wasn't because of Bikuach Nefesh that we had to accept it. Any time Yishum Davi Kamo Karbon, the Amrita Ish Ish Larabos Goyim Shinodrim and Dharm and Dovis be Yisrael Ad Kan Lashon Tos Nirali. The Amrita Kamadami Shraga La Karbon, if we accept the equation between a candelabra and a karbon, Shmamino Yisrael Shenishtamed, the Nosein Shava Lahadlik Neri Beis HaKnesses. He offers us a box of candles for Chanukah licht or Shabbos licht in the Beis HaKnesses, or just to light up the shul. Ein mekabel mimenu. The Amrinam, because the Gemara establishes in Chulin, mikem v'lo mikulchem lahotzi es hamishumad. Again, our girsa doesn't have the word mishumad, it has lahotzi es hamumar. But a mumar and a mishumad are identical terms in this context. And this chiddush of the Mari Vile, I believe, reflects itself in the Ramah in Hilchas Tzedaka, which you'll see on page 4. He speaks about a mumar, and he says, then he says, we don't accept it. Oh. Now we get to the Shach. The Shach, which you'll see on page 4, quotes a Chuvas Mabit, who says, Nireshe Mekablim in a Mumar. He wants to say that if a Mumar wants to offer a gift, we're allowed to accept it against the Mari Vile. That's the Chuvas Mabit. Afal Gav de Amrina Odom Ki Yakov Mikem Lahotzi Sam Mumar, Hainu Bikarbon Vidomile. Aval in Higdish Laniim. Oh, Higdish LeBeis HaKnesses is Mekablim. It doesn't have the status of a Karbon. Is now we have a Machlokas Achron between the Mabit and the Ramah, who's based on Mari Vile. And again, there's a whole lot of literature here, which you'll see amongst the Achronim on page 5, which you may or may not have in front of you. There's a Magen Avraham, there's a Machzah Shekel, there's a quote here from the Sefer Chassidim, and even from the Mishneh Berurah and the Chai Adam. And they want to claim that there's no machlokes between the Ramah and the Mabit. The Ramah is talking about a case where the Mumar designates one specific object as a gift for the Beis HaKnesses. Chefetz Misuyam. That's called a karbon. And we don't accept a karbon from a mumar. And that's why the Ramah is mach there. However, im ha-mumar toren kesef, schum kesef, ein isu l'kabel mimenu. We are not enjoined from accepting this money. Why? Because he's technically Jewish, even though he's a Meshumat. And therefore, the Sefer Chassidim comes to the conclusion that in Nosno Mos, Lichto Sefer Torah Bishmam, Mutar, that we can even accept money from a Mumar, a Meshumat, for the writing of a Sefer Torah. Now, if we accept this approach, this can have tremendous ramifications in a practical sense regarding the issues that I mentioned at the outset of accepting gifts from non-religious Jews. You and I would have said that if a non-religious Jew comes forward and he wants to achieve some sort of a gift to the Jewish community, well, we don't accept karbanos from a mumar. But the answer is, this is not a karbon. Either of us says that when he dedicates a candelabra to the Beis HaKnesses, we're not allowed to accept it. That's only because he specifies a physical object. And when he singles that out, that has the status of a carbon. But if he wants to come forward and give cash, pure cash, that we can accept from him. And now we have a chumrah of the Maram Shik. The Maram Shik wants to say the following. I'm sorry, did I say a chumrah?
Yeah.
I said that.
Yeah.
What I meant to say was a kula.
Okay.
A kula from the Maram Shik. The Maram Shik says the following. This whole issue here, the Marivail and the Ramah, that we can't accept gifts and contributions from a Mumar, that only applies when he comes individually. It's not part of a campaign. It's Ein Mekablim Mimumar. Avalim Bobet HaRovasim Chelke Yisrael. If the gift comes as a collection amongst many Jews in Israel, then Mutar. We're allowed to accept it. In other words, let's say we got together a group of Jews, one of whom had converted to another religion, and they chip in together as a joint partnership to buy something and give it and contribute it to the shul. In such a case, says the Maram Shik, we can accept it, but only if we don't inscribe his name on the gift. Asur lirshom shem hamumer midina. He says that if we would write or inscribe the name of this irreligious Jew or this converted Jew, we'll see if those two are the same, on the object, then it becomes, instead of bittul, it becomes a singular and an obvious public gift from this mumar, and that we're not allowed to do. So basically, we can accept gifts from Mumrim as long as they are somehow mixed up together. If it's a schum, kesef, it's a check or it's cash, so then we can rely on those achronim that we mentioned before, and we can accept it. If it's a gift, a actual physical object, then that becomes like a carbon of a mumar, which we don't accept. But if on the other hand, this carbon is brought together with other Jews who are obviously upstanding members of the community, then we're allowed to accept it. But with one proviso, says the Maram Shik, that we don't designate his name on the gift. Now, everybody else is going to want his name on the gift. He's going to want his name on the gift. We have a real problem over here, according to the Maram Shik.
There's a program, the name of the person or the corporation that that donates and the level of donation.
That's different.
So again, is it a monetary donation or is it a physical object? Do you follow my point?
Monetary.
So monetary, we said, we can rely on all these achronim who are making.
Are we saying you're saying it has to be on the gift itself? In other words, if you give him
a it could be Joe. It would be the same thing if you hung a little sign out anywhere in the synagogue
that give him the plaque.
Correct. Oh, he takes home the plaque. Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
I'm just wondering if that's why they do it like they do sometimes.
Right.
You give the plaque to him.
But you and I know that you can walk into almost any yeshiva on the face of the earth and you'll see who dedicated the room. Whether it's a dormitory room, whether it's a classroom, whether it's the Beis Medrash itself. I daven here in Imre Shefer in Har Nof. Every little object that you could even imagine has a little tiny hanging plaque from it that says who donated it. And I'd like to believe that all those gifts were donated. And in the case of Imre Shefer, I think it's pretty clear. The last time a Mumar gave a gift to Tzanz Kleisenberg was probably many, many, many moons ago. But, you know, you could have other situations in which, and again, I don't know what goes on in your parts of the world, but you could, and Joe, I know your family's active in a shul right here up the block in, what's it called, in Yamin Moshe. I don't know if any Christians are giving gifts to synagogues here in Israel. I wouldn't be shocked if there are such cases. And if they're contributing something to the Beis HaKnesses, we may have a serious problem. And surely, in the case of a Jew that converted to another religion. Now, Rabosa, I just want to point out to you, I don't know if you have any time for this, but I gave a shiur yesterday at the Gruss Center. I don't know if you're familiar. Yeshiva University has a center here in Yerushalayim.
Duv Devani.
Oh, is that the name of the street?
Yeah.
Okay, Duv Devani, great. I don't know how you know that. I'm impressed.
That's where the Rabbi David Yeshiva is there.
Correct, Rabbi David Yeshiva. I saw Rav Herschel Schechter there last night. He's on a trip to Israel. I didn't see Rav Avisha. I would have been happy to say hello. Now, at this shiur, which I haven't put online yet because I just gave it last night. I ended at about 10 p.m. I discussed the topic that is related to our topic, and that is the status of a non-religious Jew today vis-a-vis Kiruv. Does he have the status of a Mumar or the status of a regular Jew? And the nafkamina that we were dealing with was inviting a Jew of that sort to your home for, let's say, a Shabbos meal, knowing full well that he will drive home by car or take a train or whatever it is on Shabbos. Just give me 1 second, Joe, and then the floor is yours. Is this a violation of Lifnei Iver? Okay? And Rav Moshe...
You said that on Sunday.
I discussed it on Sunday?
Yeah, you put it online. I was listening to it last night.
Ah, so what I gave last night is a further discussion of Kiruv, meaning how far can you go for the sake of Kiruv, and would this be Lifnei Iver? So what you're thinking of is the tshuva that I discussed on Sunday of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. But last night, I discussed a tshuva of Hagoen Rav, what's his name? Rav Zelig Weiss. What's his first name? Rav Usher Zelig Weiss. Have you heard of Revice? Has he been to Toronto?
I don't know.
He's all over the show. I mean, he's now in Teaneck giving a bunch of lectures. So Rav Usher Zelig Weiss, let me just shock you a little bit before I give you the bottom line.
Shock me, then I gotta go.
Okay? If I were to ask you the following question, I want to come up with a kula, a heter of inviting this irreligious Jew to my house for Shabbos meal, because it's the only chance that we have of being makarif him. If I was writing such a tshuva, and I wanted to be mekil, that's my goal, that's my agenda, which of the following two possibilities would you think I would advocate? A, that this Jew is a tinok shenishba, or B, that he's a mumar?
A,
for sure. Says Rav Weiss, he's going to be matir against Rav Moshe because Rav Moshe wants to consider this Jew as a quasi tinok shenishba, and therefore I have to worry about his chil Shabbos, and I can in no way, no how facilitate or cause his chil Shabbos, because that would be a violation of Lifnei Iver. The ein omrim li adam chate. Says Rav Weiss, I'm going to consider him as a mumar. And with regard to a mumar, there is no din of Lifnei Iver, so I couldn't care less if he takes a car home on Shabbos, and therefore I will invite him to my house on Shabbos in order to be makarif.
That's disingenuous.
It's like...
Wouldn't you say that's disingenuous?
Yeah. So I ended the shiur last night in Gruss. These are smicha guys, and I said to them, this is food for thought. We want to do kiruv on the not yet religious Jews because they're all tinoko shenishbu. Rav Weiss says he's going to allow something which Rav Feinstein did not allow, invite an irreligious Jew for Shabbos knowing full well he will certainly take his car home because I'm going to consider him a mumar. And if he's a mumar, he doesn't have the halacha of Lifnei Iver. I asked the guys at the end of the shiur to think about this, and you know, if your brain doesn't just, you know, explode from this antinomy, from this contradiction. That's what I wanted to say. All right, both sides. I have to admit that, you know, we covered about 10% of what I had prepared here for today. But nevertheless, we did lay down some of the foundations. The most important distinction that we made is between a karbon and stucco. We're much more liberal in accepting karbonos from goyim, that's called nedavin nedavis, than we are with regard to accepting stucco. Stucco we're a little bit more nervous about. But if it's a physical object, then it comes under the law of karbon. In a case of a goy, that's fine. In a case of a mumar, that's a serious problem.
But let's go through the very quickly go through your first 11 questions. Your first 11 statements.
Well, again, what I want to do is go through the various tshuvas of the poskim on each one of those questions and see how they operate within this framework. So, if Joe, if you have another hour, then
yeah. can I put a pushka in a store where there are Jews are coming there and non-Jews are coming there?
So what I suggest the following is that it's a little bit of a problem because we don't want to give goyim the opportunity for tztaka. However, Rashi seems to say it depends upon whether it's b'farhesi or b'tzina. And I don't know. It depends. If you're putting a big pushka that says this is the Yeshiva University Kolel Zichron Dov program, and you put it in the middle. I don't know, give me a public place in Toronto. I didn't hang out in too many public places, but a real, Penn Station.
They have pushkas in a dry cleaners store.
No, not a dry cleaners. Yeah, give me a real Befarhesia.
So in the dry cleaners stores won't be a problem.
But I'm asking you, Dan, can you give me a case of a real public place, like in New York? You've got Times Square. You know, what's the Times Square of Toronto?
I don't know if Farhesia...
You don't know, because you're a botman like I am. But I have an excuse. I was only there for 2 years.
For Jews, not for non-Jews.
No, I'm asking. Like at the harbor or something. What? You know what I'm talking about? Like a real public place, I put a...
We need a lot of Jews or a lot of non-Jews to make it be Farhesia.
What I'm saying is that if everybody goes there, and it's clear that we're raising money from Goyim to support our Koilniks, you follow what I'm saying? That, to me, is a very, very serious problem. Rashi would call that a Chil Hashem, because why are the Goyim taking credit for supporting my Kolel? Why can't the Jews support the Kolel? You follow my point?
Right.
If, on the other hand, you put it in Sparkles Cleaners on Wilson... Okay, so a couple of Jews go in there, guys like me. My wife is in Israel, so I'm in Canada. Who's going to wash my shirts for me? A couple of yeshiva guys, who have a couple of bucks in their pocket, so they go to Sparkles Cleaners. I wouldn't call that farhesia. If a guy puts a couple of coins in the thing, in the pushka, maybe that we can call sin. I don't know.
By the way, with the inviting a secular Jew,
right?
Esha Torah's solution is to invite them to stay over.
To invite them to sleep over. Notify them that there's no need for them to take the train back home because they have a bed and they can sleep.
Right. If they don't, it's their problem.
So I would say Dan, my feeling is that Esha Torah, and for that matter, all the Kiruv organizations, are really relying on Rav Asher Zelig Weiss in one form or another, but they're adding that proviso to try to calm down those who are, those who are impacted by the tshuva of the Igros Moshe.
I don't think they view secular Jews as mumarim. They view them as tinoch shenishba.
Again, Dan, trust me, even Rav Weiss views secular goyim as a tinok shenishba. He's only using mumar as a halachic way of, so to speak, of being matir, the iser of lifnei iver. He wants to convince you that you can be fine and comfortable that when you invite a secular Jew to your home on Shabbos, don't worry about lifnei ivel lo sitei michshol, because he's a mumar. What Rav Weiss really means to say is that you can't be held responsible for his chil Hashem. For his chil Shabbos. The man is a mechal Shabbos. What's he going to do if you don't invite him for a Shabbos meal? Oh, he's going to sit there in his house like this? B'chibuk yadayim? He's going to go to the... He's going to go to the... you know, to the I don't know what he does on a Friday night, or yes, he's not sitting there being Shomer Shabbos. So basically, what Weiss is saying is that the concept of lifnei iver implies responsibility. You have to make sure there's halacha. For example, if you see technically, again in theory, if you see a Jew who's eating non-kosher food, you have to stop him immediately. From that's called mafrishin osomi surah. But Rav Weiss would argue that that no longer applies, that halacha. We are not responsible for the fact that he's eating treif. He's always eating treif. He doesn't know the first thing about kashrus. He hasn't accepted the aleph beis of Yiddishkeit. So don't tell me that you're worried, Rav Weiss is worried, about the fact that he's going to take a car home. He's a mumar. Don't misunderstand Rav Weiss. This is what I was hoping the guys at Gruss would come up with. Rav Weiss doesn't really mean to say that we should look at an irreligious Jew as a mumar. That's not our approach. The Rambam says these are tinoko shenishbu. The Rambam speaks about the bnei akaroyim, right? They were brought up as karoyim in their parents' house. They don't know any better. They've been totally brainwashed. They know the first thing. Obviously, every irreligious Jew today, I don't know every, but 99%, they're all tinoko shenishpu. But what Rav Weiss is saying, that for the purpose of this particular halachic loophole, that lifnei iver doesn't apply in situations where I'm not responsible, then for all intents and purposes, an irreligious Jew is a mumar. He's a mumar, and I'm not responsible. You can't hold me responsible to run around and start banging every irreligious Jew here in the streets here. And unfortunately, you know, in this neighborhood where I am, it's not, you know, I'm not in Hardov now. I'm in Katamon Baka. And, you know, it's not yet Shomrei Shabbos, you know, 100%. It's getting better and better. But I don't think that's because of the Kiruv movement. I just think because of the change in the demographics. So nobody's taking credit for that. But be that as it may, your average Jew here in the street is probably not a Shomer Shabbos. I would say it's about 60-40, you know. Not 60% are not religious and 40% are religious.
But I think also all Israelis know that the steak lavan is not kosher and he shouldn't be eating it.
I hope you're right, Dan. I hope you're right. I don't know. But be that as it may, could you imagine, Dan, if I took the halach of Mafrishin Oso Misura, see Ira, and I applied it to every single Jew here in Katamon? You know, first of all, they would lock me up in a jail within 5 minutes. But even if somehow I could avoid and evade the police, what kind of riot would it be if I started stopping people who are driving cars?
So it's Darkei Shalom.
No, I don't even need Darkei Shalom. All I'm trying to point out is that it's totally inapplicable to say Mafrishin Osom Misura with regard to non-observant Jews today. It's inapplicable. And therefore,
do I change halacha when it becomes really not realistic?
Okay, whatever you want to say, but you cannot be held responsible. I don't think when you get to the Olam HaEmes, they are going to fry you because you didn't stop Jews from driving on Shabbat. I don't think so. Again, you might be fried for another reason, because you could have been makariv them. You could have invited them for a Shabbos meal. That's what Rav Weiss is saying. You want to know about your mutual responsibility of Kol Yisrael vis-a-vis non-religious Jews? Invite them for a Shabbos meal. That's what he's saying.
I don't stop
that them would be driving. Your level of responsibility.
I don't stop them from driving because I don't want to do a Hirul Hashem and because of Darkei Shalom. But not because the halacha changed.
No, what I'm saying is that you can... again, I'll just say it one more time because we got to go on. In life, I have a chavrusa. And that is that you cannot be held... Lifnei iver means you are being held responsible for someone else's violation. You facilitated his... Let's say the Gemara's case is Shtiyas Yayin L'Nazir. You gave him a cup of wine. Chil Shabbos in the case of Rav Moshe Feinstein when you invite him for a Shabbos meal. You are responsible for his avera. That doesn't apply today. You don't have to go through Darkei Shalom. Forget about all those. Leave it. Just practically speaking, These irreligious Jews are on the verge of assimilation and intermarriage. Again, Toronto might be the exception to the rule. But I can tell you what goes on in America. My son was in Portland, Oregon. There's no difference between marrying a Jew and a non-Jew there for anybody from a Jew. There's nothing. Everybody's intermarried. In such a case, where a Jew doesn't care whether he marries a Jew or a non-Jew, you're going to hack him with Chil Shabbos? Again, Dan, you're talking about a different mitzvah. You're talking about an Israeli who has some tradition. Perhaps he's a Sephardi and he was brought up, or maybe he's an Ashkenazi, but he lived in, you know, amongst religion. You know that, but I'm talking about America, out there. Talk about Vancouver, Canada. I was told that the intermarriage rate in Vancouver, Canada is upwards of 90%. Which means that if a Jew marries a Jew in Vancouver, Canada, it's purely coincidental. In some cases, we have to say Yashukoyach if a male marries a female. But be that as it may, we are talking about people who are really, really over the top. There's a Reform synagogue, I mentioned it last night at the Shia, in New York City. It's a massive landmark in the city. It's 150 years old. So it's a Reform synagogue. When they open, or you might call it a Reform temple, okay? When they look to celebrate the centennial, they made a decision, you know, the Vad, that they would try to invite the descendants, the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of the original founding fathers of that synagogue. They couldn't find one Jew. Not one single Jew they couldn't find amongst their descendants. But again, this is typical of what's going on in the wild midbar of America. So you're going to talk about my being responsible for his Chil Shabbos? Pogfarke. I'm responsible for not inviting him to be Mechal Shabbos. That's what I think Rav Osher Weiss is saying. Okay, Rav Osai, it's food for thought. If you have a chance, you'll listen to my shiur of last night. The shiur of last night is a hashlama of what I started on Sunday. So Joe heard my shiur on Sunday, which I don't know how he heard it. Oh, I guess he listened to it online, I guess. But the shiur last night, the shiur on Sunday night was based mostly on a chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which in passing I mentioned last night as well. But the basic thrust of the shiur, we spoke a lot about Kiruv because that group of young men who are going for smicha at YU are interested in going into Rabbanus and Kiruv, and they wanted to hear my ha'aris. I spoke to them about a lot of issues in Kiruv, and then we dedicated the bulk of the shia, the last 45 minutes of the shia, to talk about the issue of how far I can go in violating my obligations in halacha in order to bring a Jewish soul back to the fold. All right, Rabbos, have a great week. And,